97.9 FM, WCHL, and chapelboro.com present The Art of Potential, an illuminating talk show dedicated to getting your community educated, hired, and inspired. The Art of Potential combines real-world knowledge and expertise aimed at helping our community reach their full potential. Now, The Art of Potential on 97.9 FM, WCHL.
Hi, this is Kristen Heemstra with the Art of Potential Show. We are so glad to have you joining us today. We are very fortunate to have a local person with us today. Welcome, Clark Troy.
Thanks very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Clark is talking about one of my very most favorite topics, which is a midlife career transition. And it is something that I know applies to almost every single one of our listeners, because if you have had a career at some point, you have likely transitioned in it. Like I said, Clark is local. You grew up in Chapel Hill, right? Tell us a little about that.
I surely did. I went K through 12 here in Chapel Hill Public Schools. In fact, I was a member of the pilot kindergarten class at Sewell School.
Wow.
Yep, there's not a whole lot of us around here
yeah.
that were in that class, but I'm a proud member.
You should be. You should be. And your father, I think, was one of the co-owners of He's Not Here, where some of us may have spent some time.
Yep. We bought that business in 1973, and it was in the family until not too long before my dad passed away. I guess he sold it in 2012, I believe.
So all right.
It's been a part of our family for a long time.
Yes, it has.
It was a part of our family. You need to let it go.
Well, Clark has also had a very interesting career path. So you started out, you did your undergraduate degree at Yale, and what did you do that in?
It was in Russian and East European Studies, but I was already concentrating in Russian literature.
Okay. And then you went on to Columbia and you got your doctorate in
Russian literature.
Right.
Of course.
Right. And so you went from, tell us a little bit about that iteration of your career.
Well, when I went off to college, I already knew that I was probably going to be a humanist in orientation. And I thought, oh, should I do philosophy, history, literature? And I liked Russian, so I stuck with Russian literature. It's just a fascinating field. Right. There is so much for the history of human consciousness, which so much ground was broken in Russian literature in the 19th century, that I stuck with it and went all the way to get a doctorate in it.
And then you were going to move into the academic field, or you moved into the academic field?
I was considering being an academic. You know, that was the plan when I went off to graduate school.
Yeah.
What happened was that things changed over the course of my graduate career. I went to graduate school in 1991, which was the tail end of perestroika and glasnost. And in 1991, Mikhail Gorbachev left office and Yeltsin came in. Russia started going downhill, and people were drinking more and smoking more, and mortality was going down. And Russia became a less interesting place for people to study, and undergrads were less interested in enrolling in Russian, and that's what drives the dynamics of the language field. So there were, by the time I finished my graduate program in 1999, and that was fast, I should say, for my program, there were very few positions in the field. And at the same time, there was a really good supply of great candidates who had left the Soviet Union about the same time I started graduate school.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
So there was a lot of great functionally bilingual candidates who had been trained in the U.S. academic system that were competing for those few places, and it was not a great job market, and I didn't get the job I wanted. At the same time, other things had changed, and over the course of my graduate career, I was living in New York City, where there's lots of interesting people.
Yep.
And when I'd gone into graduate school, I had a kind of narrow viewpoint that people often have in their 20s. I thought that academia was the place to be for a person who was an intellectual, and I thought that the academic career path really seemed like a natural one for me.
Right.
So, but as I lived in New York through the 90s and I got to know a broader set of people, I saw that there were many interesting and honorable things to do in the world other than just academia or, you know, some sort of woolly fought nonprofit work. So I I met people who were working in other industries, in the financial services industry, et cetera, and I found out that, hey, they were really smart and interesting as well. So my eyes were kind of opened to the rest of the world, and I also fell in love and got married. And my wife is a couple years older than I am, and by the time I was finishing up graduate school, she was 33 years old, and it was time to start thinking about having a family.
Yep.
And she got a job at Princeton, so it was going to be hard for me to top that.
Right.
Going out on the academic job market, and certainly we're going to start a family, and having a dual location academic family was not anything that was particularly attractive.
Right.
So I left academia in 1999, and I was looking around at different types of employers, and I was very fortunate to find a management consulting company that hired people coming out of academia, and I got started on the next phase of my career.
Well, and that, for this area, there's so many things I want to talk about. First of all, I also grew up in Chapel Hill, and it is a wonderful community, but to your point, the viewpoint of the community can be very narrow because we are such an academic world. And I moved to D.C. and had kind of the same experience. Like, wow, there's so many really cool people doing really cool things. And I do encourage people with children or children themselves to get out and really see and experience a lot of that, because I think that does definitely shape you and shape what you're doing. And then the other part of what you were talking about, you know, having the academic background and transitioning to a different career path. I think there are a lot of people in this community, whether Duke or Chapel Hill or whatever, who find themselves faced with that kind of a thing. You know, their job has gone away. There's so many cutbacks going on right now.
Yeah.
And they have to reorganize themselves, and they have to repurpose their toolbox and say, you know, what else can I offer to the job market? And so my question to you is, when you looked in your toolbox, so you had this doctorate in Russian literature, and you managed to transition over to the consulting side, what types of skills did you lift and transition over with?
Certainly, I was able to write, and I was able to think.
Right.
I had good analytical skills. I was able to listen, you know, and that's something that I also learned over the course of graduate school. I'd been, you know, a little bit headstrong maybe when I was younger, but as, you know, over the course of graduate school, I was put in my place on a number of occasions, and so I was able to accept guidance and tutelage, and that was very important in the for-profit world. So I think that those were very key things. I was able to talk to people, and that may not have been something that came directly out of academia. It's just maybe more of who I am,
right?
Being a fairly social person. Teaching didn't hurt, certainly. Being able to be up in front of a room,
yes,
and guide people through a complicated thing. I taught Russian. I taught introductory Russian, and then as an adjunct, I taught some intermediate level classes. So there was certainly a performance and guidance component to that.
Yes.
And there was a planning component to that. And discipline as well. I would say that being able to talk to people and gently correct them, you know, guide them, you know, help them see where they could use improvement. Certainly, you know, it was part of the teaching, what came out of teaching.
And that makes total sense. I completely see what you're saying when you explain it. It doesn't necessarily, in my mind, immediately connect, but when you're talking about Russian's a very complicated language, so you have to break it down and you have to make all the parts kind of fit together and communicate with them. Well, an organization is a very complicated entity. You know, you've got all kinds of moving parts that are constantly working. You've got all kinds of nuances going on, nuanced communication. back end communication, all these kind of things. And then, obviously, to your point, writing would be very important, and the ability to analyze and problem solve and interact with people. And, of course, the teaching aspect and being on stage, that's always part of the consulting role.
That it is. You had to do that.
So my question to you is, did you network your way into the consulting world? How did you apply for a job online? Probably not, because online wasn't that popular.
Actually, I submitted my resume through email, certainly, and I saw a job posting through a foundation, the name of which is momentarily escaping me, that was worked as sort of a matchmaker between for-profit enterprises and academia.
So okay.
It was specifically geared towards companies that were looking to hire former academics.
Oh, fantastic.
So there were a number of different consulting type companies and some of the other companies that you think of that are interested in academics, finance companies, et cetera. And I think that a lot of them were looking for quantitative type PhDs, and I had enough quantitative aptitude.
Oh, okay.
And also experience doing some IT stuff that I picked up while I was in graduate school.
Oh, interesting. So there's another thread here. We're going to take a break, but when we come back, I want to hear about this other thread. You're listening to The Art of Potential Show with Kristen Heemstra.
You're listening to The Art of Potential on 97.9 FM, WCHL.
Hi, this is Kristen Heemstra with The Art of Potential Show. Thank you for joining us. Please take a moment, check out my new website, kristenheemstra.com. You can sign up there for the Tap Your Potential emails. They are super fun.
They are great.
And today I am talking with Clark Troy. We're having a great conversation about doing a midlife career transition, talking about going from academia into the corporate world or whatever other world you want to head into. So, Clark, we were just talking, you have this doctorate in Russian literature from Columbia. You decided to move into a different field. You contacted, your resource was, it sounds like, an organization that matched academics with people looking to hire academics. And then right at the end of the last segment, you mentioned a little bit that you had developed another side of your personality besides just the Russian literature, something about IT. Can you explain a little bit about that?
Well, sure. I wouldn't actually call it another side of my personality or anything. I just picked up some marketable skills.
Mm-hmm.
My sixth year of graduate school, I didn't have any funding coming from Columbia, so I needed to earn some money. And a friend of mine worked for the Open Society Institute, which is George Soros's charity arm, and they needed a webmaster. And I had been sitting in my room at Columbia working on my dissertation, but I was also investigating my computer, trying to figure out how it worked a little bit, because this whole World Wide Web thing
right.
was happening, and it seemed like it was going to be pretty big.
Right.
It seemed like a good bet. So I had figured out a little bit about writing HTML, and it was very basic. This is back in 1996. And my friend Ted was like, hey, we need somebody to come in and work 20, 30 hours a week. And I was like, well, great. Let me figure this out. So I spent a couple of days trying to dig in and learn a little bit more about HTML and how to do some basic stuff, basically how they did their website. And I went in and interviewed with Ted's boss and got a job. So I worked there for a year or so, and I ran a website dedicated to Central Asia and the Caucasus, and then also another one on Burma. And
okay.
what George Soros was doing in Burma. And that was that. So, you know, I learned some basic HTML and how to work on Unix and other things. But for the purposes of getting my job, my real job as managing right. consultant, basically what I demonstrated was that I wasn't afraid.
Right.
Of IT,
right.
And that I guess I could bootstrap.
Right.
And so I had bootstrapped some, you know, saleable skills, and off I went into management consulting.
So for people who are out there right now trying to move around from academia out into the world that you're working in right now, what kind of advice would you give them about presenting themselves?
Well, that's a great question, you know. I think that for people who need to present themselves, I think the first thing to do is go to someone in your family who works in the for-profit world and say and ask them for help.
Okay. It's culturally different.
Yeah, yeah. Find a mentor. Find someone you can trust. And there is someone in almost anyone's family or social network somewhere. You've got someone who works for a corporation. And ask them, say, okay, what should my resume look like? You know, what should my cover letter look like? Do some mock interviews. How do I sound? This kind of thing. Just get some guidance because it is, you know, things are a little bit different in the for-profit world. And, of course, you can always look on the Internet, too. You know, there's no shortage of printed material.
Right.
Or, you know, there's books. You can look on the Internet. And they're all going to basically tell you the same things. But having it come from a human being that you trust and that can give you iterative feedback is invaluable, I think.
And somebody that you will listen to, to your earlier point, the ability to listen to the people you trust and take what they say at face value is so important.
Yeah.
To get that.
Yeah, because I think if you're looking at something on the Internet, it says, make your resume have bullet points and, you know, be specific and be terse and list your accomplishments, not your responsibilities, stuff. If you haven't made the transition, there's a tendency to resist a little bit and go, oh, that's a bunch of crap.
Right.
but when you're talking to someone that you trust and they tell you that, it's easier to listen to and it's easier to act on.
Right. Very, very good point. And I also think the way you did your transition is really interesting to go out and get a marketable skill. Like if you are eventually planning on transitioning out of academia, to build up your resume over time, or you give yourself another asset to your complete package as a person, as an employee. I think that was a really interesting thing with the IT combined with the Russian.
Yep, and frankly, it just kind of happened.
Right,
but it happened because I was motivated by a need to make money.
Right,
you know, and that's sort of how
need. Right, right.
You know, if you have a need to make money, and you are, you know, and you're blessed to be in circumstances where there's an opportunity to do so, in, you know, within a place that you're going to feel comfortable, you know, you can just do it. But you need to take the opportunities that are in front of you.
Very well said. Take the opportunities that are in front of you. And now, more than ever, you can get online and find job opportunities that way, too. You don't even have to be, you know, you can work remotely from a lot of places and pick up skills that way, too.
Yeah, you can pick up the skills. I think there's a lot of downward pressure on the Internet for, you know, things like Amazon's TaskRabbit or whatever, you know, a lot of Mechanical Turk, whatever it is. There's places where you can do things on the web. It's hard to make money unless you have a specialized skill set. That's what I'm getting at.
Yeah.
You can go out and develop the skills, yes.
And those are always added interest points to employers. So you are doing all this management consulting, and then tell us about your next career iteration.
Right. So I worked as a management consultant for of one sort or another, doing different types of projects for a few different companies for a dozen years or so. And over that entire time period, 98% of my clients, of my billings, my projects, were within the financial services industry. So I worked for a lot of different types of financial services companies. I worked for hedge funds, broker-dealers, investment banks, life insurers, life reinsurers. So I got broad exposure to different parts of the financial services industry.
And you never would have been able to get that broad of experience unless you were a consultant. Like,
true. Yeah. And, you know, there's a virtue to having had the breadth of experience, certainly. And, you know, I've been able to use that. I mean, there's breadth. I should say, you know, we don't want to overemphasize the selling points of breadth, right? There's breadth.
Right.
Breadth is good. Focus is good, too. And having a balance of breadth and focus, I think, is what one wants to have. But I got to know the financial services world, and over the course of that time, I also moved from having been a graduate student or working as an adjunct, which, we, as we all know, is not very remunerative,
right,
to being in a place where I was actually earning money. And therefore, I had to learn how to take care of my own money. And I also, I had said I got married.
Yep.
And we had a couple of kids. So all of a sudden, I'm starting to have, my interests are starting to be, you know, increasingly aligned with those of the mainstream, right?
I've got
kids. I've got to be thinking about college. I've got to be thinking about, well, gee, you know, what happens if me, the larger wage earner in our household, if I go away? I got to be thinking about retirement. You know, I have all of a sudden all of the common financial problems and challenges that face everyone are, you know, rising up before me. And I'm realizing that, you know, I need to learn how to manage money, and I need to manage the financial affairs of our household.
So you're doing this management for these big corporations with these big things, and in the meantime, you're also looking at yourself going, okay.
Yeah, all of a sudden, I'm now a legitimate financial actor,
right,
in the world, and I've had to figure out how to get my own household in line. And I was very fortunate to be doing it within the context of the industry itself. So I was exposed to a lot of knowledge and a lot of, you know, wisdom about finance. And I realized that, hey, this stuff is not only necessary.
Right.
It's not only part of who I am now. It's interesting. And it's endlessly fascinating. And it's endlessly complex. So I started thinking to myself, well, you know, if I am being so deeply drawn into the world of finance and solving my own financial problems, maybe I should consider helping other people with the same thing.
Sounds like a very natural flow of your interest. We're going to take a break right now, and when we come back, we're going to hear more about that. You are listening to The Art of Potential Show with Kristen Heemstra.
You're listening to The Art of Potential on 97.9 FM, WCHL.
Welcome back. This is Kristen Heemstra with The Art of Potential Show, and I am talking with Clark Troy. So, Clark, we've kind of covered your career path. We started with a PhD in Russian literature. We have talked about becoming a management consultant. So my question is, we were in our last segment, we were talking about you looking at the kind of big financial picture. You're working with all these organizations, helping them out. And in the meantime, you're thinking about your own financial situation now that you are a part and an active member of the U.S. economy. So what kind of things were transitioning in your mind at that time as you're looking at your life as a consultant, which is a pretty hard life? You've got a family, you've got kids. And so what kind of things were coming up for you at that point?
Right. Part of my career as a management consultant, a concern of mine from day one had been being able to spend time with my family.
Right.
You know, as I mentioned, my dad was a partner and he's not here. And my wife likes to joke, not so jokingly, that, you know, it was aptly named.
Mm-hmm.
Because my dad was... did enjoy going to the bar, etc., and he wasn't always around. So I really wanted to be around for my children. And when I started with my first consulting company, one of the great features of it was they said, well, we're not a traveling consultancy. Our clients are local here in the New York, New Jersey area. And I was like, great.
Right.
I'm really in favor of that. After the dot-com crash, it was no longer feasible to be a local consultancy, to be able to bring enough business into the firm. We needed to go to where the business was, and I started flying more, like people at the larger consultancies.
Right.
And for several years, I was on airplanes, flying out to clients, mostly in the Midwest. And I got a lot of experience, good experience doing that. I learned a lot, you know, matured as a professional, but I was away from my family. So throughout my consulting career, I was trying to figure out ways to not be on the road. And One thing I did was I started a practice area for my firm. I had been, we'd been flying out to insurers in the Midwest, and I saw that hedge funds were springing up all over the New York metro area.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, gee, we should be working for them. Some of the projects we've done for institutional providers in the life insurance space were similar, addressing similar needs to those of hedge funds, I conjectured. And thankfully, I was right enough to find some business. And I was there 3 years in a row where my clients were in Princeton, including 2 years where I was walking to work at a hedge fund in downtown Princeton. And I was hated by members of my firm who were flying off to other places. But so I was able to control myself geographically for a while, but that wasn't sustainable.
Right.
Before too long, I was getting on a train, going to Manhattan, having 3.5 hour commutes, you know, between going there and coming back. So that's a lot of time to be commuting. And that was one of the reasons I wanted to get back to North Carolina, was to have greater control over my lifestyle. So there's been a theme since I came into the for-profit world of trying to localize myself and what I'm doing. And moving into the financial advisory world, again, I had said that like the work involved in this role, in this industry, had become increasingly interesting to me. And it also seemed like it would be a way that I could control, add a measure of control over who I'm working for.
Yes.
I mean, of course, I'm limited in the amount of control that I have. I have to get the clients.
Right.
But I can look for clients around here. And I know a lot of people around here. I'm from here. I've been having success doing that. So, you know, so far, so good. I'll knock right here on the table. And it's just a question at this stage in the game of continuing to be diligent and focused on doing the right thing for clients and finding
them. So the interesting thing to me, and I think applies to everybody who has ever gone through any type of a career transition, is each career that you transition to evokes from you a new set of qualities that you possess as a person that may not have been come out or need to be applied in any other situation. It's not that they're not there. You may not know they're there because you didn't need to use them in your previous iteration. Have you had that happen where you've suddenly needed to find new aspects of yourself, develop new, you know, new abilities quickly, tap into things you didn't know you were going to need? For instance, if you are going out to business for yourself, you suddenly need to become maybe more organized. You need to, this is my experience, you need to have a sales cap on, if you will. And if you've never worn that before, that can be a very new and exciting opportunity for personal growth and development.
I think you can fairly say that. I had done sales before in the management consulting world. Again, going back to the dot-com crash, at that point in time, my firm had gone out to the executive leadership team of my firm had gone out to the rank and file amongst us and said, hey, you know, we need to have all hands on deck trying to do sales. And they really challenged us to look.
If you want to be employed, we need you to do sales, right?
Right. They challenged us to try and reach out to people that we knew and look for opportunities to do projects. And I think it was an interesting thing because I said before that a lot of the people that were hired at my firm were technical in orientation, came from quantitative disciplines.
Right.
And a lot of those people were maybe a degree less social than I was. Hadn't, I think, natively maintained a network of friends and acquaintances from their prior lives. This was long before the advent of social networks, but I had already, you know, taken to keeping in touch with people. I had a address book, and already by that time, I'd figured out that you needed to write in it in pencil.
Right.
I had an address book with little pieces of paper stuck in it.
The Rolodex.
Yeah. And I started calling people and looking for projects. And there was, you know, my first go round, I didn't get any sales in. But when it came time to start the hedge fund practice, I did. I had already practiced a little bit.
And right.
And I started going out to industry events and listening and then just walking up to people and sticking my hand out and handing my business card and, you know, smiling and acting like I knew slightly more than I actually did to try and, you know, just get a discussion going. And so I was learning the footwork of sales. And so I had already, you know, gone down some of the road that I've needed to go down at that point in time.
And I think that's really good advice for everybody. If you're looking at a career transition, you are going to be put in situations where you have to recall, you know, skills that you might not have used for a very long time or develop new ones. So the best advice is to approach it fearlessly, because it will take you a little while to get warmed up, but it does happen and success does come. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about what Clark is doing now. You're listening to the Art of Potential Show with Kristen Heemstra.
You're listening to The Art of Potential on 97.9 FM, WCHL.
Welcome back. This is Kristen Heemstra with The Art of Potential Show, and I am talking with Clark Troy. So we are talking about doing midlife career transitions, and we know just how important that is in our community with, you know, all the things going on right now. We've got layoffs going on, the universities up and down, whether it's Duke or Carolina. We just have a lot of people out there who are kind of like, you know, there's a whole world of opportunity. So how do I grab it? So Clark has been a great example. You have many iterations. You have this doctorate in Russian literature. You have been a management consultant. And now let's talk about your current iteration. Tell us a little bit about that.
Sure. Well, I'm working as a financial advisor for a firm called DWM Advisors. We're located out in Research Triangle Park. And we work with individuals as well as business owners. And we can help companies with retirement plans. And we are basically a full-service wealth management firm. We're able to help families and individuals and families with the full range of their financial lives. So we help them with investing. We make sure that they have proper insurance policies in place, that they've done end-of-life planning with regards to estates and healthcare directives and this kind of thing. We help them think about taxes, and we do all these things, I should say, without, in concert with other professionals, with other specialists. So we're not estate planning attorneys. We work
right.
with them.
Right.
We're not CPAs. We work with them. We don't sell insurance. We work with people who do. And we are a fee-only registered investment advisor, meaning that our interests are
strictly for the client.
Correct. We are aligned with the client. We are compensated only by the client, so we don't accept any forms of payment from any of the
kickbacks
of products that we work with. Well, kickbacks is, you know, I wouldn't say that. There's people who work on a commission basis, and they're very honorable people who do that, and you know, the insurance industry is all that, and people need insurance, right?
Right.
So there's no, this is just the compensation system that we work within, and we feel that is the best way for us to align ourselves with our clients without, you know, casting judgment or aspersions on anyone else.
Very nicely said. But I do think, as a person, if you are investing your money, you do need to know how your financial person is being compensated.
Well, absolutely.
I think that is a very important thing to find out. So some questions I have for you, because I think what you represent and what a lot of us fear is that we don't know what we don't know about finances. And so it's great to have somebody like you who can say, well, you really probably hadn't thought about this because you didn't know to think about this, or you might not have thought about this, or investing your money in this way, or all those kinds of things. So in your opinion, what are some of the most consistent issues you're seeing with people just across the board, unilaterally, where things you think these people really should have planned differently or anything like that?
I think a lot of people have just failed to think adequately about the future and plan. And it's hard to plan. It's hard to do the math. There are complicated frameworks for beginning to figure out, you know, how much you should be saving. And there's a gazillion words out there on the internet.
Right.
There's
it's overwhelming.
In books that you can read about it. So, it becomes overwhelming to people. So a lot of people just punt. They just say, oh, the heck with it.
Right.
So there's a failure on the part of many people to really sit down and take a hard look at what they need to do. And in the case of many people, that is, frankly, a failure to accept the need for help, to retain, as it were, proper counsel.
Right.
Now, of course, there are people who have.
Right.
There are people who can just put in the time and do it on their own.
Right.
And there are people who already work with someone. But a lot of people need to sit down with someone and get out all their little pieces of paper and accounts and review it and put it all together and think about their goals, think about their challenges, and think about what might happen to them.
That is great advice, and I will tell you, my husband and I just went through this process, and like most people, we have had several different iterations in our own careers. So to your point, all the little pieces of papers and accounts, you don't even know what you don't know. Looking at this, Gwen, that was so long ago. So if someone were to approach you, they probably should at least have an idea of where their accounts might be, I would think. Yes would be the answer.
Yeah, you definitely want to know where you have money.
Right.
And if you don't know, well, heck, it's not a bad thing to say, oh, wait, look, here's an old 401k, there's $40,000 there. Right. And it's a nice surprise.
It's a great surprise.
But I think that those fewer people are surprised on the upside than are surprised
right.
on the downside. In the sense that people came across someone not long ago who was whose spouse told them unexpectedly that there was all this student debt that she'd forgotten about.
Oops.
Yeah, that's bad. So you want to know? You want to keep track of your assets. You want to keep track of your liabilities. You need to know what you've got. And you need to develop a framework within which you can figure out what you need to get. And you need to, I think just as importantly, come to an understanding within yourself and with your significant other, if you have one, about what you want to have.
Right.
And where you're going to be comfortable in the future. What are your goals? What are your expectations? And you need to understand what most people's expectations are in the future. And there are guidelines in terms of how much of your income you need to replace in the future for retirement. And there are very clear guidelines for college. Right? We know how much college costs now, and we can estimate how much it's. We know that that its cost is rising more quickly than inflation, et cetera. So we know a lot. We just have to bring it all together, and that's how we help people.
Oh, and it's a tremendous help. It really is. And I will tell you, being in my 20s and doing, everything people told me. First of all, in your 20s, you're broke. Everyone's like, oh, save your money now. It will, your interest will compound into that. I don't know. Maybe a lot of people have money in their 20s. I did not. But, so you go through and you do this. And then you realize that actually you're just on a debt or you're on an expense long highway, So you have kids. Well, then you have to pay for for daycare, and then you got to pay for raising them. Then you have to pay for college. Then you got to pay for a wedding.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, and there's all these other things. And you're like, wow, you know, it just, oh, my gosh. And then there's braces. Yes. No. Well, Clark, you have been very helpful. If people want to reach out to you and find you, where do they go?
Our website is dwmadvisorsllc.com. Call us at 919-941-9222.
Fantastic. And that will be on the Art of Potential website. Thank you for listening. Please take a moment, like us on Facebook, and follow us on Twitter.